good football Sunday morning for you. Xander and Hanley on ESPN 1000, Bears Packers tonight. Boy, Brian, after last week, does it give you any hope against our quote-unquote rival, which I want to talk about, that word rival and rivalry by definition. But does it give you any hope, Brian?
Well, tell me who's going to be on the offensive line for the Green Bay Packers, and I can better answer that question because last week at Minnesota, I've never seen Aaron Rodgers battered and beat up as much as he was throughout that game. I mean,
it was fun, wasn't it?
It was, but they were missing three offensive linemen.
Yeah, yeah.
And a matter of fact, a buddy of mine's in a survivor pool. I am too. I took the plunge this year, but you know, to win a survivor pool, you just can't take the obvious ones. You know, all season long, because you have to take a risk.
Yep.
So that line, the Vikings were 2-point underdogs early in the week, but when the Packers were missing Lazard, one of their receivers, you don't know any of the receivers now that Devontae Adams is left.
Right.
A bunch of rookies and Lazard. But they were missing three. It was announced before the game they're going to miss three offensive linemen. So I told my buddy to take the Vikings. And the line swung to, I think, the Vikings from +2 to -2. That's how much gamblers put in stock for the guys protecting Aaron Rodgers. So they may get Bakhtiari back today. They might get at least two tackles back today, and Lazard as a receiver. So they're a 10-point favorite no matter, because unfortunately, Mark, the numbers are the numbers. I mean, Green Bay's won the last six against the quote-unquote rival Chicago Bears and 11 right. of the last 12, so it's not much of a rivalry. And up in Green Bay on prime time, Aaron Rodgers has got pretty eye-popping passer rating. So, although, you know, the Bears, do they have a puncher's chance? Well, you know, we'll find out. But the odds makers say not so much. But, you know, if the defense can make Aaron Rodgers uncomfortable today, you know, who knows? But, you know, obviously it's a huge hill to climb here anytime you go to Lambeau, if you're the Chicago Bears.
Well, yeah, and that's a big issue. The Packers have been an issue, as you stated, going to Lambeau. But I think the defense can make Aaron Rodgers, you know, throw him off just a little bit. And again, depending on the offensive line for them, and certainly that's an issue that we know all too familiar here in Chicago, although last week we were underdogs to the 49ers, right?
Not only underdogs, the first half it looked like Matt Nagy was running the offense.
Well, that's a great point there. Yeah.
Yeah, it had nothing to do. I mean, the weather had something to do with everything, but, you know, Trey Lance was out there trying to figure it out, too.
Yep.
The fact of the matter is, those, you know, that first half, and you saw people on Twitter just lighting up the Luke Getsy and the offense because, I mean, what Justin Fields had a 2.8 passer rating in the first half. They got into San Francisco territory once, and there was like 2.5 minutes left in the half. I mean, there was awful offense, and then there was that. Yeah. And I expected to see much better. Now, we did see better in the second half. Maybe it's a broken play and a fluke play, but, you know, here's Justin Fields rolling left and taking all the defense with him, and all of a sudden he crosses, you know, sees a wide-open receiver cross field, and he got a 53-yard touchdown, and that sparked him. But there was no rhyme or reason to anything they were doing offensively in the first half. And that you know, you try to do, you know, you come up to Green Bay and do that again tonight, it's good night, Irene.
No doubt. But the one thing I wanted to point out when you brought up Matt Nagy's name was that his regime, I felt, was famous for not being able to make adjustments. And we saw from the first half to the second half some adjustments being made. That's progress. To what degree? Look, yes, the weather had something to do with it, but everybody's playing in the same weather. And it doesn't mean that these Bears can play in water better than the 49ers. But the adjustments were made, and it seemed as though that was a different story than what we saw under our previous regime, the previous regime under Matt Nagy and Ryan Pace. And so I took that as encouraging. But you're right, the first half did not look any good at all. But you know, if we're able to make those adjustments, what we're seeing from the Packers up there, and I wonder how much Luke Getsy, I know that they have a new system because he's gone from there, but what kind of intel Luke Getsy can bring to the Bears about the Packers, if any, at all?
Well, it's tough because, like I said, you know, obviously Davante Adams is gone and he's making a living in Las Vegas now. And and so they, you know, they've got a bunch of young guys and Christian Watson. That game in Minnesota might have been entirely different. Watson, who they drafted out of North Dakota, was wide open on what would have been a 75-yard touchdown pass. I mean, it went right through his hands. He just took his eyes off it the last second. Mm-hmm. That would have been right, that would have been Packers up 7-0 in Minnesota, and maybe that changes the entirety the entire complexion of that game. And you should have seen the look. I don't know if you're watching the game, but look on Aaron Rodgers' face. Patience isn't a virtue with Aaron
Rodgers. Did you see him on the sidelines when he was yelling? He was ticked, and that's how you throw that man off of his game.
Yeah, he's going to have – these young guys are going to have growing pains. And after the game, he talked about how they drew that play up. And some, you know, all of the coaches are, you know, saying, are you sure you want to throw a bomb here to the kid? And he said, we know he can fly. Let's you know, give him a great debut. And, I mean, he threw a dime. It was right on his hand.
Yeah.
And Watson drops it. And, you have to earn the respect that Aaron Rodgers is going to give you, and I believe me, you know, he'll give him another game. But if that continues on, he's not going to be looking for that kid's number for a long time. But that's how, you know, to answer your question, Aaron Rodgers is still Aaron Rodgers. I know the Bears were talking about throughout the week, Mark, that you know you kind of disrespect him or overlook him at your own peril, right? Because if you think that because Davante Adams, the security blanket, is no longer there, and you think that the Aaron Rodgers and the offense is going to be severely wounded, well, that's when he's going to light you up because mm-hmm. he does. We hope Justin Fields is a franchise quarterback, and what do franchise quarterbacks do? They lift the talent around him. They you know the high tide raises all boats.
That's right. And but with what you just talked about, that broken play, you know, Aaron is only as good as who he's throwing to. And they have to make that catch. So if these growing pains are extended, there is going to be, you know, a little bit of surprise with the Green Bay Packers this year. And look, the whole idea of the rivalry thing, this is what I want to bring up, right? And I know we've talked about this before, but it's a good day to bring this up again. Rivalry, the definition in the Oxford Dictionary, competition for the same objective or for superiority in the same field. Well, the Packers have truly owned us for a fair amount of time. So while rivalry, by definition, is not really a rivalry right now until we can kind of even the playing field over a bunch of games, it is a game that we all look forward to, and I'm glad that Justin Fields brought it up this recently. I think it was this week when he was asked about it, because every time this happens, we have had Bears coaches saying it's just another game, right? You remember that? I think it must have been – oh, was that – was that Trestman that said that? Yeah. Just another game. And that's look, maybe it's not a rivalry by definition, but that is tone deafness when you say something like this is just another game. This is a big deal, and Justin has a lot to prove, and so do the Bears. And obviously, Aaron's got a lot to prove because he's older now, and he's got these new players around him, and his biggest asset is gone. So for him to perform tonight in Lambeau, which, you know, Lambeau is it's a hostile territory for Bears. It has been for a long, long time. So, no, we should never snooze on Aaron Rodgers. But, you know, our new coaching staff and what we saw last week and the adjustment, it gives me a little hope. I'm not discounting Aaron Rodgers. But at some point, he is just going to stop being as effective as he was. I'm not sure it's now.
Well, and look, after the game last week, I tweeted out, and you can follow Mark Zander at Zander Rocker, one word, one R in the middle.
Yep.
And you can follow me at Brian Hanley 534. I tweeted out just a quick observation on the game. I didn't go do a deep dive into the numbers, I just said a couple things. The new regime looks like a keeper to me. I mean, it was an ugly game, but they found a way to win it, and, yep. and they were underdogs and big underdogs. And that, you know, that the previous regime wouldn't have won that game, and it might have started a six-game losing streak. Who knows? Especially after that first half. In that first half, Justin Fields is 3 of 9 with 19 yards. The Bears had 68 net offensive yards. That was Matt Nagy's first half, like every week. Rarely did they score a field goal, let alone a touchdown. And no wide receiver or tight end had a catch. I mean, it was beyond bleak. But like you said, I had faith by the end of the game after they won that they found a way. The one thing we talked about going into that game, the Bears looked like a disciplined team. They bought into the hits principle, even though, you know, it might seem like a high school type kind of.
It's okay. I don't care if it. I don't care if it's Pee Wee football, right? If it works, it works.
It works. I mean, these guys are the mantra. I mean, they bring it up before the reporters do, right?
Right.
So I'm all for it.
I love it.
But I also said that I don't get the whole love for Joe Davis. I mean, you know, he's an okay broadcaster and nothing bad about him. But this whole idea that he's I don't get it. But anyway, that was another observation from the game. But the other thing was the San Francisco 49ers, they weren't disciplined. I mean, how many times did they have a penalty that gave the Bears momentum and extended drive and ended up in points?
Yep.
And that's the old Bears team of the last couple of years.
That's exactly right. It was nice to see somebody else doing that and us taking advantage of that. And that obviously could be a case several times this year. As long as we make those adjustments in game and take advantage of what the other team is giving us, I think we're good. We've got a whole bunch of audio on Coach Eberflus getting ready for this game, and we're going to get to that and your phone calls at 312-332-3776.
Yeah,
when we get back here on ESPN 1000. Yeah.
If you're heading up to Green Bay, give us a call. If you've been to Green Bay, give us a call. I'd love to hear some of your experiences. I mean, it's worth a trip. I don't care if it's not a rivalry and the Bears aren't ready for prime time. I've covered many games up there. But we'd love to hear, if you're heading up there, what your expectations are of this Bears team. Can they pull off the upset? Our Twitter poll today is, if they do pull off the upset, which unit has to lead the way, the offense or the defense? So, you know, weigh in, 312-332-3776, because I know a lot of people make that trip because it is a shrine and it is a place that, you know, is a football bucket list. And
it's a great facility, and you can kind of see, hopefully, what the Bears aspire to out in Arlington Heights. Things than that. But yeah, it's a shrine.
And to your point, Mark, about, you know, a rivalry, know who does put a lot of weight into Bear-Packer games? The McCaskey family.
Yep.
You know, remember when they got, I think it was under Trestman, when they got, you know, trounced a couple times, George came out and said that Virginia was pissed.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. We all know, look, anybody who walks in here from out of town to be involved in the Bears saying it's just another game really needs to sit down and have a talk with the McCaskey family for sure. We'll be back with your phone calls and that Eberflus audio right here on ESPN 1000.
You know, it means a lot. Of course, I want to win every game that I play. But, you know, of course, it's just the tradition with this rivalry. You know, it means a lot to the, you know, to us as a team, to, you know, the fan base, to, you know, the people upstairs. So, you know, it just means a lot to everyone in the building for real.
Yeah, well, it may not be a rivalry by definition because it's been lopsided in recent years. Certainly, it's a game we look forward to as Bear fans, even though it's been tough to watch over the years, recent years. But, yeah, you know, at some point, it's going to have to start tipping the other way, and hopefully it's sooner than later. This is ESPN 1000. Henley and Xander, and, you know, Brian, you threw out the invitation to anybody going up to Lambeau today to call in at 312-332-3776. I have not had the good fortune of seeing football games any place else, pro football games, than Soldier Field. But I was up at Lambeau during the summer, and they let you into the, you know, the mall part and everything. And I hadn't even seen the playing field, but it was very, very impressive what they have going on up there. And that's the only measuring stick I have for looking forward to what they're going to get done in Arlington Heights, which, of course, we've seen the drawings and all of these perspective plans, which is really exciting.
Yeah, I mean, look, they're going to take, and they didn't have, you know, at that meeting at Hershey High School a week or so ago, they didn't have any mock, you know, models of what the stadium actually would look like. They just showed the a you know, layout of the whole development. You know, there'll be housing over here, there'll be some retail over here, here's the entranceway, you know, the you know, promenade to the stadium, whatever. So we don't know, but my guess
I'm thinking of the Lightfoot drawings of Soldier Field. Never mind.
Yeah, right.
That's a different different animal altogether, but still.
What the Bears will do, and I know the Blackhawks did this when they were opening up the United Center, they would go to the most recently built arenas, so in this case football stadiums. They'll go, and they've been out to Los Angeles. So believe me, George and his team was, you know, they were taking this in last year. They were looking around, and they'll take elements of all the different Minnesota's new stadium. There are elements of, like, you know, get the natural light going in there, even if they have a fixed roof stadium, which seems to be, that seemed to be what they were talking about at that meeting. It didn't seem to be a retractable roof. It looked like just they're talked in terms of a fixed dome. Which
right, that's what I understood too. And I think a retractable is the only way to go, but what do I know?
Yeah, because look, a beautiful October Sunday, you would want to open up that roof and let the elements in, right? I mean, you'd want to enjoy that. I know it probably costs more, and I no doubt it costs more to have a retractable roof.
Hey, if you're already doing it, what's another $1 billion or whatever it costs?
I'm with you. I'm with you. So they'll take elements of renovated Lambeau as much as they hate the Green Bay Packers. They'll take the Vikings as much as they hate the Vikings. They'll go, you know, take elements of the palatial estate down in Arlington, Texas, that Jerry Jones built himself.
Right.
Hopefully, if they're going to do it right, they'll do all of that, right, and put it all together in something that everyone can enjoy. But, yeah, you should go up there as a Bears fan. I know it's tough because you go up to a place where every fast food place is on the same main road. That passes as fine dining up there. And the biggest, you know, in the past, the biggest choice Packers fans had to do, like, you know, was the wife going to wear the away Favre jersey, or was she going to wear the home one? So then you could wear the other one.
As far as the food goes, you're right. It's not so much fine dining. It's more quantity than quality up there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
312-332-3776. We've got a bunch of other audio to get to. But before we do, I got to get Bear Fan Bob on, an old friend of the program. He messaged me yesterday. He's very excited to talk with us today about this game tonight in Lambeau. Hey, Bear Fan Bob, thanks for jumping on, buddy.
Morning, boys. You know, you're talking about a new stadium. Why can't you have both? A retractable roof with glass. Be kind of nice. Never mind. Anyways, I do have a lot.
Well, that costs money, Bob. That costs
money.
Yeah,
well, guess what? You know, if you're going to do something like Arlington, get the checkbook out, quit playing around, and do it.
Well, you only have one shot, Bob. You only have one shot at it.
That's exactly right.
We don't want to go and revise it in 5 years. So, yes, if they're going to do it smart and right, they've got to throw everything at this thing to make it state-of-the-art for a good long time.
Yeah, because it will be the gift that keeps on giving. It will pay and pay and pay.
Yep.
So, you know, every time you spend every dollar you spend on that will be 20 coming back later on. So, you know, they'll get it figured out. I'm sure they will. So I have a lot for you today. I've been looking at this game, you know, and this game is going to be different than games in the past because I was at that last game. This Bears team is very different than Bears teams under the idiot, a.k.a. Nagy. So I was comparing the old lines, and the Packers' O-line sucks just as bad as ours, maybe a little bit worse because Jenkins and Bakhtiari are out. So that's kind of a push. Obviously, Rodgers, you know, and Fields, Rodgers is way better because he's got a 2.1-second release point. You know, he's quick. But since the O-line is out, blitz, 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 and blitz him again early and often. You know, Mr. Rodgers needs to meet Mr. Turfface multiple times, and Mr. Quinn needs to do it. So with that being said, now we're going to get to the offense a little. Oh, wait a minute. One more thing here with the defense. Also, I'm looking for number 9 to have a great game. What, Brisker's his name? That right?
Yeah, that kid. A lot of upside.
This kid was a beast of a man out there at Soldier Field last week. He was all over the place. He was all over that ball. I'm looking for this young man to have a pick six. And I'm looking for the Bears to get a pick six this week. You know, don't surprise me because I am picking them for the upset. Now getting to the offense. Run, Montgomery, run. If he can't run, go put the other one in. Herbert, you know, yep. What I did see with the Bears offense is that Coach Eberflus and Getsy have no problem with the change. It's like my friend Mike Murphy used to say, ride the hot pony. Well, guess what? If it ain't working, they change up and do something else. And also,
that's the adjustments I was talking about. Those are the adjustments you have to make. And you can't wait on them. You got to get them going right away. If one thing doesn't work, you got to move on to the next.
You know, I saw some two-back sets out there, and I even saw, you know, I would like to see a two-tight end set. You know, and this is good to see. I love to see things like that. The more you have the ball, the more Aaron Rodgers doesn't have the ball. You know, it's kind of like playing football. Now, when the Packers get behind, you always have to remember, you have to watch the trick play with Green Bay, because how many years and how many times have we seen that, you know, an onside kick or, you know, do something, they were going to maybe kick it on fourth down and they don't kick it and run it and get a first down, stuff like that. You always have to be leery of these guys because they're tricky. So that's all I got for you. And guys, have a wonderful day, huh?
And Bob, the peanut, yeah, the peanut punch is back too. Have you noticed that?
I did. I saw it out there. I thought it was terrific. Oh, and yeah. We had Jalen Johnson sighting the other day. It's about time these guys wake up in the backfield and do something. It's kind of nice to see, which tells me that these guys didn't want to play for Nagy. And I kind of got a little bit of a problem with that because, you know, if you got an NFL contract, I don't care who you are and who you're playing for.
You got to play.
You need to give 110%. End of discussion.
Yeah. Well, Bob, thank you for jumping in. Always a pleasure, buddy. And enjoy the game tonight.
Have a great day. Talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
Yep. Thanks, Bob. Bye. Sounds like Bob says the defense is going to have to lead the way to an upset today.
Yeah. And it's funny, Brian. He brought up blitzing, and we've got some audio on Coach Eberflus talking about that very thing and some other things that we'll hit upon when we come back. We've got Dave in Florida wants to jump on with us. Jerry in Crystal Lake wants to jump on. 312-332-3776. Getting to that audio, taking your phone calls, and more when we get back on ESPN 1000. Brian, your guitar playing has gotten better over the past few weeks. You've been practicing. I appreciate that.
Well, I did see the Doobie Brothers this week, too. So, unbelievable. Tom Johnston, the lead singer, sounds just like he did in the 70s.
Isn't that amazing? I love when that happens. And that, you know, it's hard to keep up that instrument after all so many years, you know?
And he and Pat Simmons, is it Simmons? They have unbelievable chemistry. The only guy who was off was Michael McDonald. I mean, I don't know what was going on there, but he was hardly a highlight. But if you do want to feel young, go to a Doobie Brothers concert, because even in my advanced age, I was moving around better than 90% of that crowd, I'll tell you that.
Right, right. The was the wheelchair section a little bigger than the standing section?
Well, I mean, I'm just watching people get in and out of the seats at the Chicago Theater and trying to get down the aisle in the row. So that was painful for me to watch it. Yeah. But I will say this. I haven't seen an audience as engaged at a concert like that crowd was in forever. I mean, on their feet from the start, singing, you know, every song except the three new ones they played off their Liberté album that they released last year, which were pretty good, I thought. Anyway, all in all, it was they're playing the same set every single night. I looked it up, and they don't vary from, I mean, here's your set of songs, and it's the same thing every night. But it worked for me, so it was great.
Good. I'm glad to hear that Patrick and Tom are still locked in. I told you before, the Michael McDonald years of Doobie Brothers was more or less the middle of the road, M.O.R. thing. I love the Doobie Brothers as produced by Ted Templeman in the early 70s. So that's great. I want to get to this before too long here. We just talked to Bear fan Bob, and he was talking about defense and how that is going to make a difference tonight in the Packers game if there is an upset. And I kind of feel the same. But here's Coach Eberflus on getting pressure without blitzing.
That to me it's really good because you have now seven guys in coverage and you're able to fill windows. And that's really good against a good quarterback. You know, if you're playing a guy who's got a little bit more, inexperience, you can get away with sending, you know, five or more after them and open up those windows. And that will affect them because they'll look down at the rush a lot of times. But when you have a guy with experience, you know, you really want to be able to do that most of the time, have seven guys in coverage, Russ with four. And that's how we operate most of the time anyway. But, yeah, so that's what I would say.
Yeah, you know, and Coach also had something to say on how he evaluates his defense after game number one.
I just think we play with good effort. It's not good enough. We have to improve that. You know, the instantaneous reactions need to be better. We are a little bit tape delayed at times, but we need to improve that. So we will that's this reading your keys and being faster to the punch. But I thought for the first part of it, the first game, I thought guys played relatively well.
Got to like what you hear from Coach Eberflus. Again, we're just so not used to somebody getting right to the point quickly and being able to understand what he's saying.
And you can imagine that's how he delivers it in meetings to the guys that matter, the players. And look, it, you know, the Tribune wrote about it sometimes. Luke Getsy, even after that horrendous first half, he said that he was smiling going into the locker room at halftime, and no one really knew why he was smiling. But, you know, the fact of the matter is, he said, I'm just trying to be consistent for my guys. And he's not going to panic. He's not going to show any insecurity or any, he's going to show that he's competent, that they can get it together. And they did just enough in that second half. So I'm with Matt Eberflus there that the fact of the matter is, it wasn't good enough. I mean, it was good enough to get a win, but you can't go out there and do what they did and expect to win more games than you lose. They found a way, but I liked what Alan Williams, the defensive coordinator, said. You know, you want to believe that there's gloom and doom in Green Bay because they got their heads handed to them in Minnesota, feel free to do that. But he said, we're not going to fall into that trap because, you know, the guy's still bleeping owns the Bears. That's Aaron Rodgers, right? So there you go.
Yep. And right. As fans, we get to be excited about the prospect of being able to do something that we're not anticipating doing, like last week. Nobody expected the Bears to win that game.
Nope.
But you can't. But again, this, what we're hearing from Eberflus, and you brought up a great point. He's relating to the media a message about how they're trying to improve. And it's easy for us to digest. Now, looking back at the previous regime, not spending too much time there, but can you imagine, we were hearing what they were saying to us, how confusing it probably was in the locker room. So you're right. That very pointed, easy to understand direction, the HITS principle and holding people accountable is the big difference maker, because you know, that's not what we had before. And that allows people to be ready for adjustments to be made in game. We have Dave in Florida wants to jump in and talk about rivalries here. Hey, Dave, you're on ESPN 1000.
Good morning, guys.
Good morning.
Just really quick, you know, when you were talking about the concerts last week or the one before, were you guys talking at all about the Super Bowls of rock, or are you too young for that?
Oh, I'm aware of it. I wasn't there, but I am certainly aware of the Super Bowl of rock in at Soldier Field. Sure.
Yeah, they're incredible. I went to 3 out of 4. But
did you?
Getting back to the three, Dan, I don't think it's about, you know, who's winning now. It's 100 years old. You know, we've taken our turns of dominating. It's just that we have such a disdain for them, and they have the same for us. And it doesn't matter if we're 0 and whatever, and they're going undefeated. We want to beat them no matter what. And then it's the rivalry.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. It's just interesting, and I feel the same. But by definition, rivalry is about who's if there's a one team dominate. It's not really a rivalry, but we feel what we feel, and we look forward to these games each and every year. Perhaps more than playing the Atlanta Falcons. Of course, we do. The proximity in the history, all of that. Well said, Dave. Thanks for the phone call. We've got Jerry in Crystal Lake wants to talk about what might happen in Arlington Heights. Hey, Jerry, you're on with Xander and Henley on ESPN 1000.
Hey, good morning, gents. I've been a diehard my whole life, and I'm trying to separate my love for the team with the honesty of ownership. Mm-hmm. And I hear the last caller say, not the last one, the couple callers ago say that he has complete faith in the Bears.
Yeah,
and
Bear fan Bob.
I'm like, yeah, obviously I think he's been drinking a lot already this morning. I mean, so we got the Queen Virginia of the Bears, and I think you know, she's a great lady. She shows up, and I hope she knows what's going on, and God bless her. But everybody loves their kids to a fault. Her kids are idiots. They have no direction for this team, and I have complete faith that they're going to screw this entire thing up. They're going to come out, and they're going to have a conference, and they're going to be like, oh, we're going to have state-of-the-art technology. They're going to leave out the fact that it's state-of-the-art technology from the 1990s because it's a good deal. I just don't see anything good coming of this because they're going to screw it up. The team doubled in value. It would make my day. I'd have the biggest Bears party if they just sold to an owner that really wanted to move the team in the right direction and build a stadium that was truly state-of-the-art, something that, like, the Rams built. And it just, I don't know. I'm married to the baby of 14. It's an Irish Catholic family. They're all Packer fans. And I've just been getting killed my entire life with her in-law, with her brothers.
Oh,
and
my
I just,
God. Wow.
I'm dying here, guys. I'm dying.
Hey, look, I'm the second of nine in an Irish Catholic family. That's a small family comparatively. But I will say this. I think they're going to get the stadium right because it's not – they don't know football. I'm with you on that. They think they know football. Every time George says we're the best caretakers for this franchise just because we're the McCaskies, year in, year out, you prove otherwise. They're smart enough to get the right people to build the right architects. They're going to give them the money and the resources to do it. Now, they did ask Mark, obviously, I told you this weeks ago, and you knew it anyway, but they were going to ask for infrastructure. They were going to ask for roads. They want the state and the county and maybe Arlington Heights, too, to all kick in tax money to do. They said, not the stadium. We're building the stadium because, we don't understand people don't want billionaires to get any kind of monies to build a house.
Right. But they have to build up the surrounding area to be able to handle that load of people.
But you know what? The Cubs wanted that, too, and they didn't get it from the city.
Right.
Those days have changed. I know that Ted Phillips brought up the fact like 80% of the new stadiums all got some tax help or relief from the state and everything. I don't believe that to be true anymore. And certainly the state of Illinois doesn't have the financial resources.
No.
And the county and everyone else. I mean, they don't have two nickels to rub together to give to a franchise that's worth $4 billion now, and when this thing's done and up and running, could be worth $7, $8 billion without even putting a winning team on the field. So
Right. And I certainly didn't mean to say that the state should, but it does need to happen. You're right. And the Bears are going to have to absorb that, and as they should, because they're going to make the money off of that.
Oh, my guess is Springfield will capitulate and give them what they want, but not that they should. They probably shouldn't. They shouldn't. But believe me, there's enough, jock sniffers down in Springfield that will get season tickets out of it some way, I imagine.
Well, deals are deals, right? We're always dealing with
that. Yeah, you scratch your back and put money in line.
Yeah. 312-332-3776. Let's take this phone call real quick before break here. Going out to George in England. He wants to talk
good
about
morning,
George Eberflus. Hey, George,
good
how
morning,
are you,
gentlemen.
Buddy?
Hi, Brian. It's good to speak to you again, Brian.
George.
Pardon?
I'm
condolences to the Queen.
Condolences.
The Queen, she's lived a very long and sort of, she's... most of her life in service, so to get to 96, I think, was a good achievement. For anybody, pretty good run. But the Bears defense feels like 96 years since we've won a Super Bowl, doesn't it? But that's beside the point. The Bears defense, the guy that was talking earlier about blitzing, I don't think that's the case. And what I've seen, because I do break down a tape and I do look at the All-22 constantly on the Bears because it's a passion. And that's that Alan Williams has been bringing what you call disguise pressures. So rather than sending more than four, he will send four, but it might not necessarily be the four down linemen. So he's been sending what looks like overload pressures and then robbing a flat or something with a defensive end. That last year, don't forget, Travis Gibson played in coverage. Robert Quinn played in coverage in short flat areas. So they know how to do those sort of coverages, but it gives him a lot more flexibility up front for the defensive line to actually bring pressure from places where Rodgers doesn't necessarily know that it's coming from. Now, I think the key to sort of beating Rodgers is not to be afraid necessarily of the running backs in the run game. to run blitz early and not to be afraid of getting beat deep, because if we're having seven in coverage, we can leave Eddie Jackson as a single high, we can bring Brisker down into the box on run downs, and then on passing downs you can have Brisker as the one high and you can use Eddie Jackson just basically to rob the coverage. So wherever it looks like Rogers is going to go, give Eddie Jackson as a free man, let him run, chase the ball and hit those flats and wherever Rogers wants to get to. And you need to bait him into throwing what looks like easy looks. So if we're going to get to him with four, which hopefully we do, because we had great pressure last week, especially from the rookie Dominic Robinson, if we can still carry on with that pressure up front with the four, then that gives us a lot of opportunities, because we've got two very fast linebackers that can cover man tight ends or slot receivers in short areas, and with zones over the top that gives you a lot of flexibility in terms of coverage. Bait the slants from Rogers because he loves to throw them, so and just rob a linebacker, and I think we've got a good chance. I think the offense puts up 21 plus nice today.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, very nice. George, thank you so much. Very in-depth description of what needs to happen. And you're definitely the guy who thinks that the defense is going to be the difference maker if we're able to upset Green Bay.
And Eddie Jackson, by the way, he looks interested this year, which is a nice, refreshing change. But I would have confidence in doing that, because Eddie Jackson I saw last week, I didn't see last year. So
it's been a long time. We didn't know that we were going to see him again. And that's a positive development. And as Bob said, if there were players that didn't want to play for Nagy, that's not the right way to do it. However, that's in the past. And we seem like we have a team that's truly engaged into the Hitch principle and everything that Eberflus and his staff has brought. We're going to take it to break, come back, and set you up for the White Sox. We'll get back to Bears before we get out of here at 10:30. But we've got the lineup for the White Sox game today as they go for a win. And two games they've got to get this game to win two of three in Detroit. Obviously, they're all must win. We'll set you up for that right after this on ESPN 1000.
Here's the pitch by Soto, ground ball left side and through. The Sox lead. An RBI single from Yoan Moncada brings Sebi Zavala in from third, 3-2.
All right, so the White Sox pulled it out last night. Final there, 4-3. Must win in Detroit. Boy, I'll tell you something, Brian. In the 10th, it was deja vu all over again for a little while there. We saw Lang. We sent, I can't remember who it was. Was it Elvis the first time? But no matter, we thought, okay, are we going to bunt here? And it turned out that happened in the 11th, and it was Elvis who laid down a bunt. And we heard from Miguel Cairo after the game that he said, he told Elvis, first pitch, swing, full swing. If you're getting something you like, other than that, after that, it's up to you. What do you want to do? And Elvis laid down a good bunt and set things up to take the lead. But it was Yoan Moncada, a guy who's been taking lumps, and he was the one to come through with that winning RBI.
Well, we talked about this yesterday in White Sox Weekly. I brought up the fact that that Miguel Cairo didn't bunt the free runner over. And so what changed? And look, first of all, hats off to Liam Hendricks getting out of the bottom of the 10th, because they do get their runner to third.
And that's what he didn't do the previous night. Right, exactly.
Right, yeah. So Miguel Cairo says, well, I'm going to be aggressive there. Why would we bunt? And as you said, he told Elvis Andrews, the first pitch is yours. After that, if you don't like the offering, then think about bunting. But he still made it sound like it was up to Elvis to bunt or not. He wasn't telling him to bunt. But right. I think bunting there is the correct thing to do. And apparently Elvis did too, because he laid one down and actually got on base, right? I mean, it was trying to sacrifice, but it ended up being a bunt single. And Zavala gets to third. And Cairo made it sound like, well, if you bunt there, you're not on Friday, you're not going to get more than one run. I mean, he seemed to say, if you bunt, you're just settling for one run. And you got to get one before you get two. And last night, thank God, he saw it a different way. And he actually, I still would have just told Elvis to do it, to bunt from the get-go, but it worked out, and he did the right thing this time, and they got two instead of one and won the game. Unfortunately, Cleveland won both their games of that doubleheader, and you actually lost ground.
It was pretty amazing. The Twins, I was doing post-game last night, and while post-game was in motion, I looked, and the Twins had tied it up. And then if you saw the end of the game, I mean, the Guardians are really, really on a run. And we took a phone call in White Sox Weekly yesterday, a very passionate phone call from Dan in Barrington, who was talking about how Elvis shot off his mouth, and this is the way Dan put it, which I get, because there have been a lot of talk, and it's frustrating because most of the talk isn't being backed up. But I did not have a problem with what Elvis said. He said something to the effect of, look, the pressure is on the Guardians. At some point, this run is going to start to crumble a little, but we just have to play our game. And we didn't win night before last, but last night in similar fashion, extra innings, although it went to the 11. As you mentioned, Hendricks made the stop that he couldn't make the day before, and we ended up getting another chance, another inning in the 11th, and that's when Elvis did bunt. And Miguel Cairo said several times on the postgame, he's like, Elvis is a smart guy. I trust him. And whether or not it was a mandatory bunt or as an optional bunt, the right thing happened. And Yoan Moncada, you know, had the winning RBI. He was 2 for 5 yesterday, and we've got the lineup here. We've got Elvis batting first, a shortstop. He's been leading off for a good long time, a very wise choice. Yoan's in the two spot at third base. Jose at first in the three spot. Aloy batting cleanup, DH once again, keeping him out of the field. I think that is been something that kind of obvious, and it's really sticking now. Gavin Sheets in right field batting fifth. We've got Andrew Vaughn in left batting sixth. AJ Pollock is in center field. No Luis Robert. And this thing is starting to really appear as a serious mismanagement of talent and whatever injury he has, because we've seen him. This is the third time now he's come back from a rest and then has been rested the next game. So we don't know what's up with this wrist. He obviously is not hitting the way he was before. He's not swinging the bat the way he was before. So he has the day off. Sebi Zavala catching, and Romy Gonzalez, who made a spectacular play yesterday, he's batting ninth at second base. And we have Vince Velasquez, who was just announced. Johnny Cueto had the night off yesterday. He wasn't feeling well. We didn't know if he would pitch today, so it looks like it might be a bullpen day unless Vince can get some certain amount of innings under his belt, but it'll be Vince Velasquez pitching for the White Sox against Hutchinson, and he's a righty, so that means Yoan's going to be batting lefty, which he hasn't had the success this year as he has batting from the right-hand position.
Yeah, and a tip of the cap to Davis Martin for what he did yesterday, too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, and we're going to need him, right? Because Kopech's on the IL now. We need him. He's staying.
Yeah, I mean, he comes up to fill Cueto's spot. 1 run, 3 hits, 5 strikeouts, 1 walk, 6 innings. And you mentioned Pollock. I mean, he has the big 2-run single in the 7th to give the White Sox a lead. You know, they found a way, but unfortunately, Cleveland has found a way. I don't think the pressure is on Cleveland at all. As a matter of fact, you know, you lost a half game in the standings because they won 2-1. But all you can do is win the one game you have scheduled that day. I get it. But they've found a way to keep this thing going. I think they've won, what, 10 of 12 now, something like that. So they don't look like a team that's playing with pressure on them. They look like a team that's pretty confident.
Well, they're playing. They're playing loose, but they have to win these games coming into Chicago.
And the White Sox have to win these games.
Yeah, and that's right. That's right. I mean, there's pressure on both sides. But yes, there's way more pressure on the White Sox side. And I want to mention this before we hit break. We have White Sox have placed right-handed pitcher Joe Kelly on the family medical leave list and recall left-hander Tanner Banks from AAA Charlotte. So that is the latest development. We've had some movement on the pitching staff. As I said, Michael Kopech's on the 15-day IL, so Davis Martin is here. And the Guardians are playing like they're trying to put people in their rearview mirror, and they've done that pretty much with the Twins. Now the White Sox have to win today, take tomorrow off, and really bring it for those three games. Every game has been a must-win game this year, especially in the second half, but they don't get any bigger than this series coming up. All right, we'll take a break, come back, take your phone calls, 312-332-3776. This is ESPN 1000.